Niece of the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Have the two senators from Rhode Island spoken to you, Jack Reed and Sheldon Whitehouse, or Seth Magaziner and Gabe Amo, the Congress members?
As Rhode Islanders, we speak to our delegation all the time. Our group that signed this letter and that sent them this letter spoke to our delegation. We're in contact all the time. We have various connections in their small state. And I think that we have a listening ear to all the different voices that are heard.
We have to leave it there. We thank you so much, Providence College political science professor Ruth Benarzi, niece of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. I'm Amy Goodman, Nir Mishaykh.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio just wrapped up our annual fall membership drive. Support from listeners like you helped us reach our goal, gain new members, and prepared us to bring you more organic, homegrown, fresh off the vine community radio. Thanks to all those who donated during this drive, and thanks to those who listened in. Stay tuned for more.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up in the KBOO Evening News, a court decides what happens when someone is charged with a crime in Oregon, but there's no public defender available. Teachers continue their strike, getting some support from a newly announced Oregon congressional candidate. And doctors at Oregon Health and Science University are trying to get the message out about how dangerous falls can be and how to prevent them, especially among older people. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, November 16th, 2023. I am Annette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us. Oregon sheriff's offices do not have to release people from jail if they cannot quickly assign them a public defender. And that's the result of a new federal appeals court ruling. KBOO's Josh Salem has more on the story.
A federal appeals court has blocked a recent district court ruling regarding public defenders in Oregon. Earlier this month, U.S. District Court Judge Michael McShane granted a preliminary injunction that would force Oregon sheriffs to release people from jail after 7 days if they had not been assigned a public defender. The state has a tremendous shortage of public defenders. As a result, a recent count estimated 2,525 people in Oregon had been charged with crimes but did not have an attorney. This means the state was violating the constitutional rights of many low-income individuals, which have been interpreted to mean a lawyer has to be provided to anyone charged with a crime who cannot afford one. McShane's injunction was due to take effect on November 23rd, but the stay issued yesterday by the Court of Appeals will temporarily block it. The Oregon Department of Justice appealed McShane's ruling to the Ninth Circuit, which will decide whether or not to hold a hearing and when that hearing might take place. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
A 10th day out of school for about 44,000 Portland Public Schools children and a 16th day of being on strike for their approximately 4,000 teachers. Get That's the sound of teachers striking at Cleveland High School, saying they're stronger and more powerful than ever, and declaring, when we fight, we win. Yesterday, teachers heard from former Multnomah County Commissioner Shashila Jayapal, who has resigned from her elected county seat to run for Congress after longtime Representative Earl Blumenauer announced he's retiring.
Our teachers deserve more. Our teachers deserve more. What I have seen firsthand, and granted it was a long time ago, I'm going to date myself, my kids graduated in the 2010s, but what I saw was teachers who were up early in the morning. I saw late nights. I saw dedication. I saw passion. I saw creativity to do more with less year after year after year. That's what I saw.
Jesse Beeson has been appointed to replace Jayapal as Multnomah County's District 2 Commissioner and was sworn in this morning. In today's Health Beat report, trauma surgeons at Oregon Health and Science University say the single most common cause of traumatic injury they see is ground-level falls, which can be life-changing and even deadly. Falls can cause hip fractures and spinal and brain injuries, and though many are preventable, the incidence of falls has been rising sharply in recent years. OHSU's Dr. Elizabeth Ekstrom and Dr. Colleen Casey discuss strategies to prevent falls, especially among older adults.
Falls lead to reduced quality of life, reduced mobility, increased risk of being placed in a nursing home, and many other quality of life consequences for the older adults who fall. So it is very important that we do everything in our power to help our older patients reduce their risk of falling.
Screening for falls was not something that our clinic did prior to beginning the study project, and it was very important that we figured out a way that dovetailed with a lot of the other efforts that we were already doing in clinic. One of the ways that we started thinking about doing a fall screen on a routine basis was to add it to someone's chart, just like you would add an annual flu vaccine to someone's charts. We developed a falls risk indicator so that when a fall screening was due for someone 65 and older, it would trigger on their chart and the provider and the other clinic staff would know that a fall screen was due. It was important for us to pilot the study protocol before we rolled it out to the clinic at large. We did this by having a few providers, all of us in geriatrics in particular, use the various electronic health record tools and the workflow to test it out and to find where we needed to improve some of the systems. If another clinic or healthcare system wants to use Study, I would encourage them to collect information about what will work with their current workflow process as well as their electronic health record. It's really important to take clinicians and clinic staff where they are currently practicing and then tailor workflows and tools to those systems and processes.
Study has impacted our practice in a number of ways. I think that it's helped to enhance teamwork in the clinic because staff and providers are really working together to make Study a success. And patients love Study. They really feel that it means their providers and their team are paying attention to their risk for falls and giving them some tangible things that they can do to reduce their risk of falls. So I think it's made a big difference. I had an elderly gentleman who I didn't know he was at increased risk of falls, and he didn't know he was at increased risk of falls, but he scored high on his Study falls risk assessment. So we looked at his medications and were able to stop a couple that were increasing his risk of falls. In addition, he told me that he had been afraid of falling, and I was able to have him do a PT gait and balance evaluation to learn an exercise program that would make him have less fear of falling. Both of these things allowed him to get back out into the community and do more of the things that he loved to do.
The FBI is warning that reports about hate crimes have increased dramatically several years in Oregon, and the Multnomah County Auditor is recommending a series of anti-hate online trainings. They focus on Islamophobia, gender discrimination, and in this one, anti-Semitism.
This training existed before October 7th, and obviously is continuing to exist beyond. So we have modified the curriculum to try and meet the moment, but news keeps happening quite fast, and unfortunately there's been a serious rise in incidents. So we can't include everything that has happened, but we will try and make sure that you have some understanding of what's going on, how we're in this moment, and how we can respond. We're not able to address all the root causes of anti-Semitism. anti-Semitism and solve it, right? And that was feedback I got from the last training I ran, was like, but this doesn't fix it. Unfortunately, we don't have the power within us to, in one fell swoop, eliminate all anti-Semitic hate and harassment. Wouldn't that be nice? But what we are aiming to do is to help support people who are experiencing harassment and hate where they live, and to be able to stand up and, in a grassroots way, kind of stop things as they're happening and see how that can blossom. But we are not able to teach all the techniques for how to support citizens living through war in these countries, but we can teach you how to stand up to the hate that you are more likely to witness in your own communities. So this is a moment for all of us to stand up together against hate. I'll name out some of the examples that we've seen in recent years. On October 27th, 2018, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 11 people were killed and 7 were injured in a mass shooting at the Tree of Life or La Simcha congregation in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. On January 15th, 2022, in Colleyville, Texas, 4 hostages were held for over 10 hours at Congregation Beth Israel in Colleyville, Texas. In October 2022, throughout the country, 59 anti-Semitic incidents directly referencing Ye, the artist formerly known as Kanye West, occurred from October through December across the U.S. following his anti-Semitic comments on Twitter. These included 44 cases of harassment, 13 cases of vandalism, and 2 cases of assault. And in February of 2023, this year in Los Angeles, California, 2 people were shot at point blank range by the same assailant within a 24-hour period in the Pico Robertson area, a Jewish neighborhood in Los Angeles. So the first question is, in 2022, approximately how many anti-Semitic incidents were officially recorded in the United States? So do you think it's 250, 3,700, 900, or 2,100? A lot of folks thought 2,100, a lot of folks thought 3,700, and a few more who were in these lower numbers. The right answer here is 3,700 incidents, and that is a 37% increase from 2021. So that's moving in the wrong direction, right? This sharp rise in incidents in the U.S. and around the world is why we're coming together today to learn how to stop it and why that's so important. So I'm with Right to Be, formerly known as Hollaback. We are an organization whose mission is to empower everyone to build a world that is free of harassment and filled with humanity. Our work focuses on turning the care we have for each other into simple, creative, effective action. We are learning together to show up for each other with training, partnerships, and community organizing. So one of our main partners that we work with for this training is an organization called TRUA. So TRUA is the Rabbinic Call for Human Rights. We are so grateful to be doing this work in partnership with TRUA. And we want to especially shout out and thank Rabbi Lev Mirowitz-Nelson from the TRUA team, who really led the charge on co-creating this curriculum with us in this training. So thank you to Rabbi Lev. Now, TRUA since 2002 has brought a rabbinic voice and the power of the Jewish community to protecting and advancing human rights in North America, Israel, and the occupied Palestinian territories. They do this by training and mobilizing a network of 2,300 rabbis and cantors together with their communities to bring Jewish values to life through strategic and meaningful action. Here's what we're tackling. We are going to take a second to reflect on what anti-Semitic harassment actually looks like, because we can't intervene without knowing what we're looking for. We're also going to talk about the history of anti-Semitic discrimination in this country and how history set the stage for this moment. And while we're focusing on the history in the United States, we recognize that anti-Semitic discrimination has been occurring across the globe. We're going to spend a little time reviewing key moments throughout history that have influenced the trajectory of the Mideast conflict to help us better understand the current moment we're in. And then we'll learn a little bit about Right to Be's 5 D's of bystander intervention. That's our kind of signature core curriculum, our technique that we empower folks with to really intervene in the moment, discussing what keeps us from intervening first, what are our hesitations, and then figuring out what can we do and what's going to work for us. And then we'll lastly get a chance to practice at the end. So the purpose of this training is to talk about your role as a bystander. So I want to recognize that many in our community may find themselves as the target in these situations, or be afraid that by intervening, they could become the target. And so that's a safety concern that you really need to think through and hold seriously. And we want to hold space for that and name that. But one of the things to keep in mind is that people experience public spaces differently, and that may depend on the person or on the situation. And this is because of privilege. So privilege is a set of unearned benefits and power maintained by a group in society, and it extends to all parts of someone's identity. So race and ethnicity, faith, immigrant status, gender identity and expression, language spoken, and many others. your privilege and your vulnerability can change depending on the situation that you're in. So in some spaces, your privilege gives you more power than others, and that might mean that you can help in a way that others can't. So I want us to all keep that in mind as we go through the training today. I know that some of you may have been doing work in this space for a long time and that the ideas of privilege and bystander intervention are very familiar to you. And if so, we welcome you to share your strategies and intervention techniques that work well in your communities.
And that was a sample of an anti-hate training from a group called Right to Be. A new report shows big disparities in crime and policing. Black Americans were more than 9 times as likely as whites to be homicide victims in 2020. Native Americans were 4.3 times as likely, and Latinx Americans were 1.9 times as likely. Danielle Smith reports on the Sentencing Project.
The lifetime likelihood of imprisonment for black men has changed significantly from one generation to the next, according to the Sentencing Project's latest report. In 1981, 1 in 3 black men were likely to be in prison at some point in his life. In 2001, this number had decreased to 1 in 5. Report co-author Nascal Gantnews with the Sentencing Project says the report documents some of the progress that has been made in reducing overall levels of incarceration and racial disparities. But at the same time, it underscores that there is still a long way to go.
When we look at the total U.S. prison population, it's declined by 25% since 2009. Mississippi has been reducing its incarceration level as well by 22% since it reached its peak level in 2008. However, Mississippi has a much higher rate of imprisonment than the rest of the country.
According to the Prison Policy Initiative, Mississippi has an incarceration rate of 1,031 per 100,000 people. Gantnews notes that Mississippi, along with Arkansas, Louisiana, and Oklahoma, have an incarceration rate that's about 50% above the national average. Gantnews emphasizes that other states have used strategies that include reducing the influx of new inmates and curtailing the length of sentences for those already incarcerated. She urges Mississippi to adopt these strategies to further expedite its progress in reducing its prison population.
That if we want to eliminate racial disparities in incarceration completely, and if we actually want to get U.S. incarceration levels to be more comparable to that of our peer countries, we also need to do something to tackle rates of serious violent crime. And that's certainly something that Mississippi needs to do as well.
Gantnews points out the importance of directing resources towards short and medium-term initiatives aimed at tackling violence, steering away from over-reliance on incarceration and excessive policing. She contends that to genuinely mitigate substance abuse issues and the related criminal activity, it is crucial to advocate for universal access to effective drug treatment. I'm Danielle Smith.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News In-Depth. We'll have the Global Citizen International Digest and a look at the 5th National Climate Assessment. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, American Indian Airwaves. Tonight's weather, mostly clear skies, a low around 40. Tomorrow's weather, Friday brings mostly sunny skies and a high of 56. And for the weekend, a good chance of rain both Saturday and Sunday with highs in the low 50s. Today in history, on this date in 1907, Oklahoma became the 46th state in the Union. Our quote of the day is from former Oklahoma Governor Brad Henry. Something called the Oklahoma Standard became known throughout the world. It means resilience in the face of adversity. It means a strength and compassion that will not be defeated. Data shows that people who live in rural communities die 3 years younger than those in urban areas. And death rates from heart disease and stroke are much higher in rural areas. Mike Moen has the story.
Today is National Rural Health Day. Some smaller communities are trying to become more cardiac ready. Across rural America, health experts say factors like ambulance shortages and hospital closures add to access issues for patients, leading to poorer outcomes. The American Heart Association notes that rural populations are 40% more likely to develop heart disease. AHA's Tim Nicolai says that's why his organization is working with small towns and cities to build a nation of lifesavers for when a rural resident experiences a heart attack.
Are the people and the organizations around them prepared to respond with effective CPR, with utilization of an AED, and kind of just having that entire system in place?
The association is working with state officials to make its Cardiac Ready Communities program more accessible in South Dakota. Municipalities that apply for the designation are given tools to evaluate gaps in getting residents trained and fitting buildings with the proper equipment. In South Dakota, places like Kimball and Plankton have been certified through the program. Nicolai says schools should be a major priority for any readiness planning.
There's dozens or hundreds of students there day in and day out. There's dozens of staff members. There's often parents and other volunteers visiting during the school day. And then you think about athletic events and community events that are often housed in schools.
He says schools should not only make sure staff are trained, but also make sure automated external defibrillators, or AEDs, are placed in visible locations and are accessible after hours. Nicolai says churches, food pantries, and community centers are other places to add to a readiness plan. Local leaders wanting to pursue a certification can contact the state health department. AHA also has details on its website where communities and businesses can build their plan. This is Mike Moen.
Some members of the House GOP are still trying to blame the January 6th insurrection on the FBI. New Hampshire continues its first in the nation primary despite DNC changes, and lawmakers are facing pressure to regulate social media, with more on the stories impacting our democracy. Here is today's edition of 2023 Talks.
If you are asking whether the violence at the Capitol on January 6th was part of some operation orchestrated by FBI sources and or agents, the answer is emphatically
not. You're saying no?
No.
FBI Director Christopher Wray denied Congressman Clay Higgins' assertion that the FBI helped incite January 6th. The Freedom Caucus member claims agents were at the riot dressed as Trump supporters and arrived at the Capitol on ghost buses the night before. The Wray has long denied the conspiracy theory. The Louisiana Republican insisted, saying, "Your day is coming, Mr. Wray." In the same hearing, Wray said the Bureau has opened a number of investigations into Hamas, saying the war is increasing the possibility of a terrorist attack here. New Hampshire is still planning the first in the nation's presidential primary despite the Democratic National Committee's calendar changes. Daniel Scanlon, New Hampshire's Secretary of State, says using racial diversity as a reason to rearrange the primary calendar sets an ugly precedent.
At what point does a state become too old, or too wealthy, or too educated, or too religious to hold an early primary?
Meanwhile, advocates are pressing lawmakers to hold social media companies accountable for their impact on young people's mental health. The Kids Online Safety Act aims to establish social media safeguards and give families transparency and online tools. Meta whistleblower Frances Haugen says giving teens and parents more control over social media can have acute benefits.
Imagine something as simple as having the right to reset your algorithms. Right now, kids have to decide between their past, you know, all their posts, all their friends, and being stuck in rabbit holes that threaten their futures.
A new study looks at what happens to children and adolescents after they survive being shot. 1 year after surviving gun violence, they have higher rates of chronic pain and psychiatric disorders and almost 150% higher rates of serious substance abuse. With mass shootings going up every year, Kelly Drain with the Giffords Law Center says something's gotta give.
Gun violence is at this really severe crisis point, but we also are seeing more states than ever really step up and pass the kind of laws that are necessary to combat this crisis. That's not to say that we don't need more or that we're doing enough, but I think we are definitely seeing signs of progress.
A new report from the Sentencing Project digs into the reasons for persistently higher rates of incarceration for minority men. The research says variations in those incarceration rates track the higher prevalence of police traffic stops for Black and Latino drivers. Report co-author Nazgul Ganoush says racial disparities have been reduced in some places, but more work must be done in states with higher incarceration rates.
If we want to eliminate racial disparities in incarceration completely, and if we actually want to get U.S. incarceration levels to be more comparable to that of our peer countries, we also need to do something to tackle rates of serious violent crime.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
The delegates at a Native American convention are about to vote on some controversial proposals. A new institute will train tribal water rights advocates to address shortages. And the U.S. Senate votes to extend WIC, SNAP, and the Native Diabetes Program. With these stories and more, here's the latest edition of National Native News.
As the National Congress of American Indians Annual Convention continues in New Orleans this week, there are some controversial amendments which will be voted on Thursday. A proposal seeks voting membership to be restricted to only federally recognized tribes and only citizens of federally recognized tribes to be eligible for an individual membership. Another proposal is for board members and regional vice presidents to be citizens of federally recognized tribes. As Rhonda Lavaldo reports, while there's much debate, not everyone wants to go on the record to share their viewpoints.
Currently, NCAI considers both state and federally recognized tribes as voting members of the organization. A proposed amendment eliminates that voting status to only federally recognized tribes. One leader has concerns, saying it diminishes federally recognized tribes their sovereignty in NCAI. Chief of the Shawnee Tribe, Ben Bartons.
For the majority of these state-recognized tribes that are members of NCAI, they have no Native ancestry. They're not Native governments. So this creates problems for folks that are still seeking recognition and are legitimate. But NCAI has refused to deal with this issue, and now its member tribes are left to take this up and make sure that this passes.
Several attendees at NCAI with various views declined to comment to National Native News about the proposal, but in an opinion piece in Native News Online, Lumbee Chairman John Lowry called the possible changes internal termination process that contradicts the founding principles of NCAI and a slippery slope for the organization that could open up other tribes as targets, including landless or non-treaty tribes. NCAI is being held in Louisiana, a state with four federally recognized tribes and nearly a dozen state recognized tribes. Currently, NCAI has 145 tribal memberships. Of that number, 24 are state recognized tribes. This is Rhonda Lavaldo for National Native News.
For years, drought and development in the West have caused water shortages for tribes. Now a new institute aims to give tribes resources and training to advocate for their water rights. The Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Bradle reports.
It's called the Tribal Water Institute. Its goal is to help tribes navigate laws and policies and recruit and train young water attorneys. The project was created by the Walton Family Foundation, a group working to protect rivers, and the Native American Rights Fund, a nonprofit law group in Colorado, where the institute will be based. David Gover is a managing attorney and Pawnee in Choctaw. He says helping tribes protect and assert water rights comes at a critical time.
Climate change is impacting all of our communities, right? And it, you know, there becomes a more competition for that resource. And of course, the states and industries not waiting around, right? They'll continue to find what they can and take what they can.
He says the new institute will allow the fund to double its water staff to 14 members. The team will publish a semi-annual report to educate tribes, policymakers, and attorneys about new and ongoing water rights cases and issues. For National Native News, I'm Caleb Radel.
The U.S. Senate passed a bill late Wednesday night to avoid a government shutdown on Friday. It has two expiration dates, one for funding programs for agriculture, energy and water, veterans and military construction, and transportation and housing through January 19th. The second has an expiration date of early February for the rest of the government. The measure also extends the special diabetes program for Indians through January 19th and the nation's farm and food programs, WIC and SNAP, until September. Congress is on break for Thanksgiving. The bill was sent to the president for a signature. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
With gold mining and large-scale timber operations largely a thing of the past in many western and plain states, some folks in a small town are trying to carve out a new prosperity plan. Mark Moran reports.
Residents of the Montana town of Lincoln are working to create a new economic development plan that adds recreational opportunities and wilderness while also preventing wildfire. It has been a long and delicate balancing act, but people involved in the issues say they've come up with a successful proposal. Lincoln is a sliver of privately owned property nestled between huge swaths of public lands along the Continental Divide. It came of age during the 1800s gold mining era. When the gold panned out, Lincoln shifted to logging. Now, with that practice limited, the town has developed a new plan for its viability. Bill Sear has lived in Lincoln for most of his life and says the Lincoln Prosperity Proposal is the next step toward economic success, while also creating a new wilderness area and preventing catastrophic wildfires. It also allows some logging and adds trails for motorized vehicles, mountain bikers, and hikers, all of which appeal to recreation enthusiasts who come from Great Falls, Helena, and Missoula.
A lot of those people living in those larger communities commute to Lincoln on the weekends to hunt, to fish, to camp, to go hiking, to go motorbiking or four-wheeling or whatever their form of recreation is.
Sears says this proposal will keep visitors coming to Lincoln and serve as an economic development tool, but it'll take an act of Congress to make it a reality. Sears says the group is asking Montana Senator Steve Daines to introduce the Lincoln Prosperity Proposal in Washington next year. Montana Trail Vehicle Riders Association President Russ Enos is pleased with how much recreation area is added, especially in light of Montana's shifting economic landscape.
Snowmobiling, ATVing, side-by-side riding are becoming much more important to the economy of Lincoln and also for the quality of life of the local people who ride there.
Enos adds that even though the plan calls for adding wilderness area, it does not close any trails and in fact makes more of them available for motorized vehicle riders. I'm Mark Moran.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, November 16th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Mel Gertop, Danielle Smith, Mike Moen, and Mark Moran. The producer is myself, Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. So glad you joined us. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth. Coming up next, we've got the Global Citizen International Digest and a look at the 5th National Climate